Good afternoon, folks, and welcome back once again to another edition of the Come Out of Her, My People show. I am your host, Mark Call, and this is a show, of course, where we talk about any number of aspects associated with that, I would say, suggestion, but it gets stronger and stronger as we get closer and closer to where it's obvious, to come out of her, my people. Do not participate in her sins so that you don't partake of her plagues. Today, what I want to talk about is something that is a bit more subtle, and yet, on the other hand, where we're going to end up is far more blunt than sometimes, but I guess usually we have gotten pretty blunt of late, haven't we? Anyway, I'm going to call this show As the Screws Tighten, and you'll see why we use that title in just a minute here, but it also could be subtitled Back into Bondage. There are any number of references, but I want to begin to kind of illustrate where I'm going with something that happened this week. It was a an online forum that I participated in off and on for a number of years, and I saw an interesting comment. One of my detractors up there, and maybe that's not quite an appropriate way to characterize it, but anyway, said something to the effect of, "Oh, MC has been predicting cataclysmic change in 2 months, or not at all." And I thought, wait a minute, you know, I've made it as clear as I can. I don't do dates. I don't predict anything within a certain period of time or not. Arguably, the cataclysmic change, and this is the point I made in response, has already happened. And the trouble is most Americans just don't recognize it. They're utterly clueless about it. And I have said, and you've probably heard it on this show and other places for years, most Americans won't wake up and realize what's happened until they walk into the local Walmart and the shelves are empty. In other words, folks, yeah, the cataclysmic change has happened. It happened with the plandemic. It happened with the mRNA injections of the biggest bioweapons deployment in human history. Is the cataclysmic change obvious to so many of the people that are literally walking dead at this point? Do they know their immune systems have been destroyed? It'll take years before the younger ones realize that, hey, they're never going to have kids if, in fact, that is where they're going to end up if they manage to last that long. You know, you've heard this analogy, and it literally it's so trite at this point, I almost hate to mention it, but it certainly fits, of the frog in the pot, right? Everybody knows you turn the heat up gradually. The frog is so, well, Americanized that he fails to jump out of the pot until it's way too late, and then he just kind of drifts off into a boiling sleep. Again, all of these metaphors apply as the screws tighten back into bondage and a number of other places. Where I want to go today, I'll introduce that way, and I'm going to suggest the following. We're talking about slavery. One of the aspects of what is coming, and no, it's not just the mark of the beast, that's an element of it. No, it's not just famine and the four horsemen of the apocalypse, that's an element of it. It's not just the biggest debt cataclysm, I'll use that term, in the history of the world, because we have the biggest debt bubble, the biggest fiat currency bubble, you name it. In almost every category, the almighty fiat dollar has exceeded anything history's ever seen before. It's even lasted longer than some of the fiat currencies, but remember, not one in history has ever lasted for very long. What does all of this boil down to? Well, I'm going to suggest it in one word that most people don't want to hear. Not only is it death and the four horsemen and all those kind of things, the mark of the beast, but ultimately, folks, it boils down to slavery. And it's a slavery that, too, is more insidious, more pervasive, and, well, more ignored. Frog in the pot, screws tightened, than almost anyone in America that is becoming one of the new slaves has ever figured out yet. So let's throw that on the table. I want to mention a couple of things that I think will all help to tie together. Obviously, slaves can't own weapons. We can see how this is playing out because the intent of the regime, it worked for Adolf, it worked for Stalin, it worked for you name it in history. They've always disarmed the slaves before they, implement the final solution. Obviously, it worked for Adolf, too. So slaves can't own weapons, but wait a minute. Hey, slaves can't own anything, even their own bodies. Right, Joe? Remember this, folks. My body, my choice is just another way of boiling that frog in the pot. You have one choice if you're an American slave. You can't defend the body. You can't prevent it from being injected with poisons, the mandates. You can't require that it be unmasked, and they're going to bring those back, too. The level of stupidity here is one of the things that just has me kind of slapping my head and going, oh, good grief, how much more is it going to take? All right. What I want to do is mention one thing up front, and then I'm going to throw out some stories that will help to illustrate where I want to go today. But I will contend, of course, that and when I teach the book of Exodus, this is always the emphasis I make, there are really two themes that run throughout the story of Moshe delivering people out of bondage. One, and this is the one that I often emphasize, I'll not make as big of a deal about it today just because it's not exactly what I want to go, but it fits, and that is the Hebrew term Ani Yahuwah. I am Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. Now, the King James twists it and distorts it and literally eliminates the really important part, which is that he is, and then he gives his name. Well, they put his name, they take that out and they put capital L-O-R-D in there and make it something pablumized. But the point is, Ani Yahuwah, I am who I say I am. And he makes that clear to Moshe, he makes it clear to Pharaoh, he makes it clear to the world. And it's been hidden. And what's the other thing? Oh, yeah, this is the element that fits today. I brought you out of Egypt, out of Mitzrayim, out of bondage, out of the slave state by a mighty hand. And that kind of terminology, the mighty hand bringing people out of bondage or out of Egypt, is mentioned about a dozen times in the Torah alone. The prophets also mention it, and it shows up in one place that I'm going to come back to today as well, which is Deuteronomy chapter 7, verse 8. And if you think about it, and if you remember the things that you'll see at baseball games, John 3:16, this fits. I'll mention it, and I think it's going to end up being the conclusion, too. This is Moses' summary in, of course, the book of Deuteronomy. Because Yahuwah loves you. Now, they took the name out there, too, and put that capital L-O-R-D in there. Because Yahuwah loves you, because he would keep the oath that he swore to your fathers, Yahuwah has brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you from the house of bondage. Oh, and from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, or I guess you could say Hitler, king of Germany, Stalin, king of you name it, folks, Joe, king of what was once the Republic. But wait a minute, those things haven't happened yet. Well, that's where we'll end up, because Deuteronomy is going to point out exactly what will happen. And that's the good news. But let's talk about where we are, because we got to get there from here. And one of the things that I'm also going to make real clear is that the level of slavery that is now extant in America, and we haven't even gone to where they've planned yet. The disarmament's not complete. The total slave state is not complete. Remember, in Mitzrayim, in Egypt, it took a while before those people that were living in the land of Goshen were reduced to abject slavery. Now, these people know the lessons of history. They got it on a warp speed track. Aha. And it's happening a lot faster. Will it take generations? Well, it's taken generations to get us here, but I suspect we're going to see the final warp drive conclusion. I'm not going to give a time frame, but I do think you can smell it from here. All right. Remember, slaves can't own weapons. Slaves don't own anything, even their own bodies. And let's therefore go to this piece. This comes from Andrea Widberg, and it's a really interesting story. AmericanThinker.com. It's about a Republican attack on a fellow named Matt Walsh. That's the headline anyway, and that's not exactly what I think is the main point here. He told the truth about slavery, and they hammered him for it. One of the most pernicious things, she writes, that's happened recently in America with a K, is called, you've heard it, the 1619 Project. I would say literally a communist error riddled, but it's a totalitarian take of the United States. It presents our nation as one that's predicated solely on the evils of African slavery, beginning in 1619, when a European first set foot on American soil. This original sin, says the 1619 Project, tainted literally everything that followed. Therefore, only racists can love America. Obviously, the socialist far left has embraced that fake history. But when commentator Matt Walsh discussed the larger history of world slavery, it wasn't just the socialists that came after him. It was even some so-called Republicans, rhinos, if you will, who don't want the truth out there either. Okay, she gives a brief bit of background, and this is important. In 2019, a reprobate named Nicole Hannah-Jones, who knows nothing about history but seems to have a great deal of a familiarity with propaganda, working with who else? The New York Times and their so-called magazine developed the 1619 Project, which essentially claims America's originally, and here's the key, entirely unique sin of slavery. It's so embedded in the very warp and woof of this nation that America itself is irredeemably corrupt. Forget all this jazz about liberty and God-given God-given rights. No, no, it's slavery that makes it irredeemably corrupt. The purpose is to drive an immovable wedge, she writes, between blacks and whites in America, preventing the national unity that, well, back when we were a nation, gave it some strength. Then she goes on to talk about a fellow named Sean Willens, who is a very progressive professor of history at Princeton, but someone whose passion for American history means he can't even lie about it. So he's not a very good progressive. But he's attacked the 1619 Project on factual grounds. Imagine that, folks. An actual progressive liberal recognizing facts and getting upset about it. His critiques, she writes, make for illuminating reading, but the short version is that the 1619 Project is factually wrong from top to bottom and front to back. All right, no surprise. That's been dealt with, so I'm not going to dwell on it. But fast forward from 2019, when the project broke, to July 30th of this year, just a few days ago. Commentator Matt Walsh has just finished reading a book called Dean King's Skeletons on the Sahara, a true story of survival about an American ship that wrecked on the shores of Africa in 1815. 200 and some odd years ago, the survivors were sold into absolute brutal slavery. Huh? Wait a minute. Doesn't the 1619 Project say that America is literally the sole source of slavery? How dare anyone suggest that black Muslims, in Africa might have had anything to do with it? Yeah, the survivors were sold into brutal slavery, a few were finally ransomed, and the memoirs that the captain of the ship, James Riley, wrote about the experience, it was called Sufferings in Africa, became a massive bestseller in the early 19th century in America. Inspired by the book, Walsh put out a series of tweets pointing out that slavery in America was the end of the line for slavery. And by the way, she points out he missed a major element here, but he gets part of it right. This was because the combination of the Judeo-Christian tradition, in other words, folks, I'll say it, that Old Testament thing, that book of Exodus, among other places, and the Enlightenment caused Westerners to recognize that a universal practice among humans, humans have held slaves in all times and literally in all places, in all parts of history, was a moral evil. Okay, she quotes Matt Walsh. I'll mention just one or two of his tweets here that got him in such trouble with the Republicans. Well over 1 million whites, he writes. Uh-oh, can he say that? Obviously not. They were enslaved in North Africa between the 16th and 19th centuries, most of them abducted and sold by, Muslim pirates. You've heard of the Barbary Pirates, the shores of Montezuma, the shores of Tripoli, the Marines, him, all kinds of references, and those are being expunged from history, too. Africans, he writes, were raiding Europe for slaves for hundreds of years. You can look at the history of Southern Europe, folks, and see that this is, in fact, true. But the school system has totally erased this fact from history. And I'll suggest there is a reason. Because the modern history is more pervasive, more pernicious, and, a lot more subtle than people coming and raiding folks outright. It happens quietly. And matter of fact, it's happening in the schools. Of course, white people were also enslaved in other parts of Africa, too, and across the world for centuries, and including North America, where the 1619 Project seems to largely ignore. And I'll admit, I haven't read all the nasty parts of this. I don't intend to waste the time. I don't read, I might read a novel occasionally, but I hate to read, crap that's masquerading as fake history. Anyway, remember, there were white servants that were called indentured servants, folks, shipped to the colonies by the thousands for a long, long time. Now, I will add one thing in here, and this is, about all I'm gonna say about indentured servitude. I encourage folks to look at it. Essentially, it was, in theory, the practice is different, contractual. And at least to that extent, it was far more honest than what's been done to Americans today. And you might even call some of these folks colonial coyotes, because that's exactly where the similarities begin and end as well. What happens with coyotes that promise people a ride to America today? Well, a lot of them end up dead in the backs of semi-trailers, dying from heat exhaustion and stroke. A lot of them end up raped and let loose or killed and their bodies stripped of any valuables and thrown in the desert. Can you imagine that coyotes have been the same for hundreds of years? In other words, the problem is, yes, indentured servitude was contractual. People do have the right to contract themselves into slavery, and that, by the way, is how America gets away with it. The problem, and this applies to the modern slave masters as well as the colonial coyotes and those that are still doing it, is so many of them were dishonest. They promised people, oh, we'll take you to this land of freedom. and it turns out they ended up being killed along the way, or raped and pillaged and murdered and robbed, you name it. And when they got there, they found that what they got wasn't what they were promised and so forth. So yes, there was a contract, and no, the problem is the contracts, just like so many, were not honored. And by the way, again, I'm going to suggest that is a common root with American slavery as well. You can sign up for the socialist safety net. There's a level of contractual indentured servitude too. Guess what? It's not going to be honored either. And one of the ways they're going to do it, oh, you know the answer, hyperinflation. All right, another post from Matt Walsh. Slavery in America didn't begin in 1619. White children were being kidnapped and sold into servitude in the colonies before that. And let's not forget, slavery existed in the Americas for hundreds of years prior to that even, because Indian tribes literally universally practiced slavery. Slavery persisted in non-Western countries, too, even after it had been abolished in the West. It was an accepted institution in Africa and Asia for millennia, arguably. It's still an accepted institution worldwide. They just call it something different. And the moral evil never seems to have occurred to so many of these societies. All right. Because he was provocative by nature, back to Andrea Widberg's summary here, Walsh was unsurprised when he got pushback from leftists about how American slavery was not unique. But what did surprise him was the pushback he received from so-called Republicans, who castigated him for, the conservative movement using the lies to try to welcome blacks into the fold. And the idea that it might actually be true and that something needs to be pointed out from factual history, that was seen as a problem. How dare you point out the actual facts and the terrible reality of indentured servitude to other peoples, unless they're of the politically correct color. And nowadays, of course, the politically correct, pronouns. Anyway, she says the following, and I think this is key, and I'm going to go a bit further. Regarding slavery as a general matter, says Andrea Widberg, the only thing I can think Walsh forgot to include was the reason that the West moved away from slavery. Yeah, it was that nasty Old Testament thing, which represented the first, and for millennia, the only religion in the world, i.e., Bible-oriented, the faith in Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, whether it was called Christian or Judaism, at least when they accepted that Old Testament thing, they challenged slavery. It did so in two ways. First, the Exodus itself is a celebration of a slave revolt. Think about it. These are people. Let my people go. We've all seen the movie, heard the text, even if we've not read the book. Secondly, Exodus mandates, and she gets this wrong. She says it's Jews. Folks, it was the mixed multitude, which included Jews, but also the lost tribes, and this is something I emphasize. For our points here, just suffice it to say, no, it's a lot bigger than just Jews. It was everybody who came out of bondage with Moshe, and that included even a lot of Egyptians and people of other nations. They were all grafted in, if you will. But the reality is that the Bible mandated that those people who were part of those 12 tribes of Israel needed to free their Hebrew slaves after just 6 years. And that began the concept of liberty as a moral precept. By the way, the Declaration of Independence, as you know, and I talk about this frequently, expanded upon it. Those angry Republicans are dead wrong when they believe it's a mistake to take actual history and talk about it. The entire purpose, she says, behind the 1619 Project and so-called critical race theory is to make black Americans hate white Americans. And they do that by falsely claiming America was unique and uniquely horrible when it came to black slaves, and no other kind existed. From that, as noted above, the socialist, progressive, leftist, Democrat, communist, the fascist, they say that anybody who actually values America and the actual history, i.e. Republicans and conservatives that don't sign up for the Kool-Aid, must be a slave-loving racist. And she concludes that the only way to push back against this foul narrative is with the truth. Now, I'm going to suggest that's great. But the point is, it's the whole truth. And no, slavery was not abolished. No, everybody that studied the Civil War and Lincoln knows it really didn't have anything to do with abolishing slavery. It didn't end slavery, and I'll make the point. I like this quote. I can't find the attribution, but I've used it for years. I once thought it was Frederick Douglass, but I can't prove that. Anyway, he said, whoever it was said, let all those who falsely believe they are free rattle their chains. Now, I won't emphasize this too much. I've talked about it many times in the past. But remember, the Bible limits slavery to 7 years. Just tell the IRS after 7 years of putting more of your money into the kind of slavery, in other words, a higher percentage, than Pharaoh demanded of the slaves in ancient Egypt. That included Egyptians. Remember, they were supposed to pay 20% after they lost their land to the Pharaoh. Whoa, 20%! I get you, most middle-class Americans would love if it was only 20%. But remember, it doesn't end after 7 years either. And they'll follow you overseas, even if you escape, and go somewhere to be an indentured servant. The IRS will come after its slaves forever. But wait a minute, there's a lot more. As I've already mentioned, the whole concept that somebody can be told, you will take the poke, is an abomination. And to claim that such a person is not a slave, literally, that's stupid. Because the worst Simon Legree-type slave master wouldn't have injected his slaves with a poison and killed them. They were too valuable to kill. Not so in modern America. Those slaves, they can not only kill, they are, of course, like all slaves, disarmed. They can take away their stuff. That part, at least, is consistent. But American modern slavery is kind of unique and arguably worse than any slavery we saw in the 1800s, to the extent that, they will force people to do all kinds of things. They will pay for them to abort their kids. Most slave masters wanted their slaves to have kids. Again, the parallels here and the fact that modern American slavery is worse, I could go on for an entire show about. But I hope that point has also been made. And finally, let's not forget, dishonest weights and measures themselves are a big form of slavery. The almighty fiat dollar. If you think about what you're doing when you trade somebody their time for worthless money that's really not money, it's not even currency, it's not constitutional, it's not scriptural, it's just a fake. It's theft of time. Well, what is slavery? Slavery is just theft of more and more of your time. Did they steal 100% of the slaves' time? No, obviously they had time to make babies. Obviously they had time to eat. They had time to sleep. They had to stay alive, at least, unlike modern Americans that can be injected and don't even stay alive through their exercise sessions. But still, it's a theft of time. On every score, I'll just challenge you. Take a look at the things that people today are putting up with and ask them, and they'll be blind to this. Let those who falsely believe they're free rattle their chains. Ask them what it is that distinguishes them from a slave. Well, pick a point in history. And the answer is not really a whole lot, except, of course, the level of the depredations. All right, from there, I want to go to a related story. This comes from Jim Kunstler, James Howard Kunstler, and he says it this way and makes a couple of points. This will take us to the break, and we'll pick it up and finish after that. But as in the USA, the governments of Euroland have also declared war on their own people. Now, think about it. See, by the way, the definition in the Constitution of that is treason, to declare war on the people. Boston, Massachusetts, may be among the most woked up of the nation's cities, even more so, perhaps, than the left coast. By woked up, writes Kunstler, I mean susceptible to the quasi-religious frenzy that compels the performance of moral atonement scripts. Now, he gives these people more credit than I do, saying that there's an emphasis on obeisance to so-called experts, like the evil Dr. Mengele, you know, the name Tony Fauci, Rochelle Walensky, Klaus Schwab, and the distinguished authors of critical race theory. But still, he writes, it was a bit of a shock last week to see the Boston Red Sox playing in what else? Sky blue and yellow uniforms in solidarity with the neo-fascist failing state of Ukraine. Newsflash to Boston. Russia's special op is all over but the shouting. Plus, nobody in the USA cares about it anymore. Hey, they're more worried about the next front of World War III. And if they did, it was for the wrong reasons anyway. The right reason to care is that the monkey masquerading as the Joe Biden caricature, puppet master, puppet string thing anyway, you know, the senile one, and his unique and insane campaign to destroy Russia has only brought Western Europe, and with it, most of the United States, to the brink of collapse and ruin. And that means the decline of maybe fall of Russia, of Western civilization altogether. You won't hear about this from the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard, but status, says the author, drives wokery. And we'll pick it up right there when we get back.
There's going to be the devil to pay. All you sinners, don't you know that you ought to know? Satan
heaven's waiting for you deep in the down below. Below, you can go to that church on Sunday. You can wash all your sins away. But if you're only really good on one day, it's gonna be the devil to pay. Oh, live it up, laugh it up, judgment's coming. It's gonna be the devil to pay. Gonna get you today.
Back, folks. This is the Come Out of Her, My People show. I'm your host, Mark Collin. Today, we're talking about As the Screws Tighten, Back into Bondage, issues associated with slavery, whether the dumbed down people are becoming the 22nd, I guess, at this point. Now, who knows how many times we have descended into slavery. Let's not even keep track. But anyway, who are becoming the modern slave class, recognize it or not. And when we went to break, I was talking about a piece called Atonement by James Howard Kunstler, who doesn't come right out and talk about slavery, but he does mention wokery, which is kind of how you get there. Status drives wokery was where the music came up, because woke elitism has more money than it knows what to do with. Well, let me pause a second. He'll make a gradual distinction here, but not quite to the extent that I will. This is not money, remember. What people have anymore, the fiat dollar, is not money. It's not constitutional. It's not scriptural. It's not silver. It's not a weight and measure of anything. It's really, at best, currency. And through and through, it's a fake. So they have more currency, you might say, than they know what to do with. And he suggests that makes some of them feel a bit guilty, right? They talk about the carbon footprint, and yet they burn more carbon in an average day than the average peon burns in a year, and so forth and so on. The hypocrisy is part of it. But maybe then that's why they posture and virtue signal and so forth. But if they are worried about having too much money, says James Howard Kunstler, don't worry, they won't have very much for very long. They'll have a lot of money pretty soon that's worthless, and then they'll have none of it at all, or no currency like everybody else. The demoralizing inflation, he writes, that's already underway, it leads to the destruction of credit, and when enough credit is destroyed, there will be no currency, since the currency we have is based on credit. When that happens, their self-proclaimed moral purity, you can see what that'll buy you. All right. He goes on to note that the woke elitism of Europe, led by Germany, is driving the EU into the abyss, to a ditch, without bothering to go to war. They don't have the military moxie to prosecute a war with Russia, and that ain't going to happen even if there's intervention in Ukraine, and I'll take him at his word there. I won't argue that. But instead, they have the torn-up reams of trade agreements and an imploded, richly constructed supply chain and network of basic operating resources like oil, natural gas, minerals, and grains. This is part of what he calls their absurd act of atonement, in obeisance to the World Economic Forum and the fiends behind the puppet, Joe Biden. Lately, they've even been bent on destroying the food supply, okay, with their cockamamie idiocy about climate change and so forth. Okay, he considers that this is somehow an act of attrition because of their wokery and their need to feel bad about what they're... No, folks, I don't even go there. This is just simply because they worship a fake god. We know the name Lucifer, Old Scratch, the bad guy, Hasatan. Not a pronoun for it, him, but a name. In any case, the point is, he comes but to kill and destroy and to steal. And that's obvious. And if you didn't see the video of the Baal worship at what do they call it? I don't even think of that. Anyway, some masquerade games that's going on now. It's obscene. And it ought to resonate because it comes right smack out of Scripture. It's just that most people are so dumbed down, so ignorant, they don't recognize it when their chains are slapped on their wrist and when history repeats itself. And all of this, says Kunstler, doesn't even include the forthcoming attrition among the so-called vaccinated. We've succeeded in disabling and destroying the immune systems of literally millions of people with the mRNA poison poke injections. They're all going to get sick, or at least they'll get sick from all kinds of things. Many of them have died outright already. Activities will stop working, including the medical industry. So many of the injured and dying won't be able to receive care. In the late summer interim, American Pharma says they're going to bring forth the new and improved booster poison poke injections for the latest whatever they're going to call it, the variants. You can be sure it'll be more shuck and jive, though. Why does anybody believe them anymore? That's a good question. Few are lining up for the boosters. Fewer parents are stupid enough to be dragging their kids into the death camps for the shotmeisters. What remains to happen, and probably, he suggests, will happen by summer's end, is a massive uprising of the non-woke against the woke elites and the end of their insane depredations. They can atone all they want at their trials and executions. Well, I think he's being too kind. I really wonder if something in line of the French Revolution isn't, in fact, where America is likely headed. I'm sure the elites have thought through all of this and said, well, that's when we got to disarm the American people first. We may have guillotines, but that's for the slaves and the indentured servants, not for us. Well, folks, these things tend to get out of hand. And one of the things that I have cautioned about is the following. The only thing worse than what a civil war, like Civil War 2.0 would bring, is what we will get if we don't have one. In other words, any way you look at what's coming, it's ugly. And arguably the ugliest of all is if the American people literally just rattle their chains and don't even recognize the level of bondage that they're in. Okay, let's talk about some specifics of things that have happened very lately that lead me to make sure that we need to talk about this today. There was a story out of Project Veritas about the Federal Bureau of Investigation, one of the most satanically evil Schutzstaffel, SS, Gestapo-like groups in American history. Yeah, the FBI put their hand on a Bible and lie through their damnable teeth. Anyway, it reached new heights this week with a newly leaked document that they revealed. It was called Unclassified Law Enforcement Sensitive, FBI Internal Use Only. And it outlined all kinds of things that Big Brother's minions of Satan who walk in men's shoes have planned for those that dare to recognize American history. Outlines symbols, images, phrases, events, and even individuals that special agents should look for when identifying what they're now calling MVEs. And that means an American who's read the Constitution, who understands Scripture, who knows history, right? Militia violent extremists, MVEs. And to get this, under the section entitled Symbols, the document claims that these evil MVEs, quote, and I'm going to quote this, justify their existence with the Second Amendment due to the mention of a well-regulated militia. That, of course, is a lie. That has nothing to do with it. The independent clauses shall not be infringed, and that's the point. But somehow or other, they're going to try to say, oh, this is where they get the militia connection. Anyway, as well as the right. Now, notice this is not a privilege. This is a God-given, once at least constitutionally protected, right to keep and bear arms. Below that, continues the various summaries here, under the commonly referenced historical imagery and quotes section, there are things like Revolutionary War images, pictures of the Gadsden flag, the Betsy Ross, that's the circular 13 stars flag. They're listed as signs of violent extremism. Anybody that, in other words, understands history is almost certainly a violent extremist. Oh, how about if you know about Ashley Babbitt, how she was terminated by a scumbag, basically. This was an execution, folks. Oh, if you talk about that, you are probably an MVE. The document also lists various historical events. I've talked about them, so I guess they would want to label me and anyone who knows this in the same camp. That's the intent. The document lists Ruby Ridge, Waco, and the Oklahoma City false flag, the bombing there, as radical and or violent events in the past. And notably, and this is something that several folks have pointed out, Project Veritas leaked the document, but the left's bureau, the leftist bureau and their elitists, they made no attempt to list any symbols, images, phrases, events, or individuals associated with radical left groups, like them. like the former and current president and those that are pulling their chains, including Antifa, who flies a red and black flag, the anarchy flag, the anarcho-capitalist, the anarcho-socialist flag, or the Black Lives Matter flag, or the rainbow flag, or any number of other flags during these demonstrations, some of which have been extremely violent. In other words, they put to shame anything that the MVEs have perpetrated. They burnt down entire city blocks. In other words, the summary here, the FBI has been weaponized, and this is exactly what Hitler did with the SS and the Gestapo. That shouldn't surprise anyone. Then we go to this story. Now, this one is one I haven't really spent a lot of time on, but I do think it's important, ought to concern us, and honestly, I don't care how people feel about Alex Jones. He is, and rightfully has been called, a canary in the coal mine. This piece is by the Daily Bell's Ben Barty, and he writes, "Today they come for Alex Jones." Yeah, you remember the quote. Maybe you don't if you were public school misindoctrinated. Anyway, tomorrow it's for all of us. Alex Jones, the Texas radio host, is currently on the hook. They are trying to hang him. And you talk about slavery, folks, indentured servitude. They're trying to squeeze $150 million out of the Alex Jones turnip, which would bankrupt all but the top 1% of the top 1% of the elite. The batch of civil lawsuits, it's called Lawfare, against Alex Jones and InfoWars goes like this. He claimed on multiple occasions, and basically this is pretty much a lie, and having looked at all the evidence, I conclude that Alex Jones, whether you like him or not, is a lot closer to the truth than the BS coming out of the so-called the court here, which is really a circus. Anyway, they say he claimed that the 2012 Sandy Hook school shooting didn't happen. And actually, at most, he may have even referred to it once, but the point is, and the author makes this point, he also posited other alternative theories, like it did happen, but it was a false flag. To be sure, says the author, there are lots of strange goings-on surrounding that case, the shooter. This is not a unique case, folks. You look at any of the mass shootings, you're hard-pressed to conclude that the truth has been told in any of them, especially places like Las Vegas, where there were literally any number of eyewitness reports. I've heard the audio. This was full auto. This wasn't a bump stock. And anybody with half a brain can tell the difference. There were multiple shooters, too. Everything about that case, everything about almost all of these, stinks to high heaven. There are lots of anomalies, he says, and he's not going to list them all. I'll just mention like one or two of them. Even the mainstream outlets reported that the FBI and CIA visited the shooter, the one that they identified as the lone gunman, Adam Lanza's house. They discussed his fascination with mass shootings, and then the agents declined to take further action. Or, as it turns out, can I say this? I'm just going to posit the possibility, folks. Or did they? Okay, then there was a parent that appeared on a poster at a vigil for a massacre, and let's just put it this way. There were a whole lot of really strange things that happened. I'll leave it at that. Again, while none of these are prove anything, they don't prove government collusion, but they certainly warrant further scrutiny. And here's the point, and this is all Alex Jones did. It's a fair game to examine all of this stuff with a skeptical eye. As a matter of fact, I'll go a step further. I think it's vital, it's important, not to be a dumbed-down Kool-Aid-drinking sheep. Look at everything with a skeptical eye. I've said it, it's a joke that's now become true. If you see a politician, his lips are moving, that means he's lying. That's how you can tell. If you do not look at the crap that's being pushed by the mainstream media with a skeptical eye, you're what they call a dupe. You've probably already taken the poison poke in your boosters. You probably wore your mask like a good little slave, and oh yeah, there you go. You're probably going to be enslaved and never even recognize the chains with which you are already shackled. Now back to the story here. The persecution theory in the civil lawsuit is that the parents of the Sandy Hook kids got harassed by evil Alex Jones. It was his skepticism which caused them unquantifiable emotional distress. Well, maybe we can quantify it. How does $150 million sound? Their lawyers, though, want $150 million, and they're going to keep a good, solid, you know what, a third of that or more. And the corporate media is practically, as Ben Barty puts it, having orgasms on air about it, because nothing excites them more than shutting down their populist and arguably a lot more popular competition. Remember, the waste stream media and their trust, in the public, by the public, has plummeted to a record low. Only about 1 in 3 people are gullible enough to believe CNN, for example. And that's probably an overestimate. CNN Plus, remember them? The platform intended to rival online media failed just 3 weeks into the launch after CNN's parent company had injected over $300 million into the failed project. Now think of it, that's twice what they want to milk Alex Jones for. The trouble is, they're really, really big. They actually have that much money to throw away. He almost certainly doesn't. And the waste stream will lie about how much he has, but the point is, this is intended to do one thing. To bankrupt him and demonstrate to any other people that dare to tell the truth, we're coming for you next. Okay. Jones never once even named the purported victims of Sandy Hook. He never put their names on the air. Which, at least back when we once upon a time kind of sort of had a standard, would seem like the baseline element of defamation. In other words, he never named individual parents. Okay. The default judgment, though, demonstrates how far we've come from the rule of law. A jury wouldn't have bought the BS that they're being fed, so they skipped that phase. Again, they went straight to damages. In a break from the Constitution's the requirement that the Seventh Amendment list, let me just read that. It says here, in suits at common law, well, we haven't had that for a long time, so there you go, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20. Now, even if you factor in hyperinflation, folks, and the fact that a dollar's worth, less than 1% of what it was when this was written, if it was $20 in silver, that still isn't much. It's nowhere close to 150 million fiat bucks. It says this, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved. Now, arguably, we haven't had trial by jury. We haven't even had a jury-rigged trial for a long time. Alex Jones didn't even get a pretense of a jury. That's how far, says the author here, fundamental rights have been eroded. Literally, we're getting back, dragged back into the feudal era. And that is the point I've been making for this whole show. We are looking at a level of slavery, which is feudal, F-E-U-D-A-L, in its level of execution. Remember, the slaves, the serfs, the peons were bound to the land. The king owned all the land. Well, isn't that the case today? Guess what? If you want to find out who actually owns the land that you think you own, whether you have a mortgage on it or not, just quit paying the feudal duty, the property taxes. These elements of slavery, of feudalism, of the Dark Ages, the pick a historical parallel. They're all writ even larger today. What has been demonstrated in the Alex Jones show trial is guilty until proven bankrupt. To summarize the current so-called jury proceedings, jury rig proceedings, they're not about determining guilt. The almighty state has already decided that for them. The only question is how many hundreds of millions Alex Jones owes based on his predetermined guilt. This is public. It's a brazen display of extra constitutional power, and that is the point of the exercise. Achtung, you will submit. The state wants to demonstrate that it's no longer even remotely constrained by the Constitution when it comes to persecuting those who dare to speak up. And Jones, he makes the juiciest target possible. That suggests the officers why they started with him. He's bombastic. He's flamboyant. He sometimes comes off as an unhinged lunatic. That's his brand. His demeanor assists the corporate state in framing him as a unique example of all of you peons, you MVEs, you people who believe the Gadsden flag, don't tread on me, who believe that you have rights from God rather than the people who play God on TV and pull his little puppet strings. For all his theatrics, though, Jones has been prescient. He's been right about too much. From the blowing of the whistle back in the day on warrant-free mass-scale NSA spying, even before Ed Snowden leaked it and proved he was right, Jones was there, to toxic water and pollution causing chemical castration, the dreaded sex-changing frogs, to the mRNA vaccine fraud. He was among many of us that pointed out how bad that was, folks. He has been the quintessential canary in the coal mine, and they don't want to just destroy him. They want to kill him. They want to show you what kind of slavery awaits all of you, because we can simply declare you to be guilty and fine you more money than any person could ever hope to have in any 7 times 7 times 7 years of slavery. And that's the point. As he puts it, this is the Empire Strikes back. And it's a taste of things to come for other less notorious subversive figures. The FBI's already telegraphed the moves. We've seen it coming. Again, the point here is, I hope, really, really clear. This is about slavery. It's about something that if you go back and read, and I encourage you, go back and read the story of the Exodus and see what it was that Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, the one whose name they don't even want people to know anymore, in an Old Testament that they say is done away with, inappropriate, no wonder we don't study it. It's part of the reason why if you, if you ignore history, you're condemned to repeat it. The kind of slavery that America is now embarked upon makes anything that ancient Egypt ever dared to do look kind of tame by comparison. Remember, Pharaoh only took 20% of the people that were in the original parts of that slavery. Later on, they took more, and already they're doing that here. What I want to do today is close with a reminder from Deuteronomy chapter 7. Now, this again is Moses' summary, and I'll read it the way that it should be read. And remember, when you see capital LRD, put his real name in there, because Scripture tells us that they're going to hide it, and indeed, eventually, we will know it. And I hope we're getting closer to this day. Because Yahuwah loves you, and because he would keep the oath with which he swore to your fathers, Yahuwah has brought you out with a mighty hand, redeemed you from the house of bondage, from the hand of Pharaoh, Obama, Biden, king of Egypt, you can see the parallels, right? Therefore know that Yahuwah, your Elohim, he is Elohim, the faithful El who keeps covenant and mercy for 1,000 generations of those who love him and keep his commandments. And listen to this and ponder the importance. Now, as you know, there are elements of Scripture that are conditional. In other words, he says, if you love me, keep my commands. If you will do these things, then blessings will come. If you don't, then cursings will come. Well, we've already seen what those cursings look like. I suspect we're going to see more of them. But here come the blessings. And also, it's a warning for those that are doing exactly what they're doing to his people, those who seek to be called by his name. And it says he repays those who hate him. You know, the ones that teach in school, the ones that destroy the rule of law, the ones that basically worship Baal openly. He repays those who hate him to their face to destroy them. He will not be slack with him who hates him. He will repay him to his face. Therefore, and this is for the rest of us, you shall keep the commandments, the statutes, and the judgments, which I command you today, to observe them. And then it continues. Then it'll come to pass, because you listen to these things, these judgments, and you keep them and you do them. There is the because part. There's the if part. There has never been a time, folks, when it's been more important, I will suggest, to listen, to study, and to walk in obedience to him. Because the curses are now obvious, the blessings are clear, and here's the key. Then it will come to pass, it shall come to pass, because you listen to these judgments, to keep them and do them, that Yahuwah your El will keep the covenant with you, and the mercy which he swore to your fathers. And he will love you and bless you and multiply you. He'll also bless the fruit of your womb and the fruit of your land, the grain, the new wine, the oil, the increase of your cattle, the offspring of your flock, all those things in the land which he swore to your fathers to give you. You'll be blessed, and so forth and so on. He'll take away the sickness. All of this is a good promise. Now, remember, there are elements of prophecy that repeat. I'll contend that this is one of those key elements, and we see it. Moshe, in this particular sequence, and as he wrapped up his warnings to the people of Egypt before they went into the land, he said, you ain't going to do this. You're going to fall away. And indeed, they did. And when you fall away, all these curses are in this book. They're going to come upon you. And they did. And you're going to be exiled. You're going to be sent into bondage. And they were. By the time that that happened, there were two kingdoms, northern and southern kingdom. Both fell into bondage. And guess what, folks? We are still in that bondage. Literally thousands of years later, those elements of bondage are still appropriate. All that's happened today, and this is where I will suggest, when we begin to see prophecy come full circle and the pieces fall into place, and the things that, Daniel and the book of Revelation and all of these other prophetic utterances, including Moses in Deuteronomy chapter 30, when these things begin to come to pass, what we can recognize is, what's different this time around? Well, we're seeing a fulfillment, I will suggest, of truly biblical proportions. And more importantly, or at least more to the point of what will help us to see it, there are elements of things that are being done today. I mentioned the level of slavery. Well, this is the kind of slavery that will allow Scripture to say that he causes all, great and small, to have this mark or else they get killed. They won't even be able to buy or sell. They won't be able to do anything. How's that for slavery? And if they take it, well, it's a level of death that most can't even conceive of. In other words, folks, the level of technology today to allow some of this elements of slavery to be brought into place didn't even exist 50 years ago, much less 100 years ago or centuries ago. It does now. We're seeing all these things come to fruition. And let me read the good news and the bad news. For those that are doing this evil to us, the Faucis, the Biden Führers, the tyrants of the world, he repays those who hate him to their face to destroy them. He won't be slack with them. Therefore, for the rest of us, you shall keep the commandment, the statutes, the judgments, which I command you today to observe them. And because you listen and keep them, Yahuwah will keep his covenant. And that is the blessing. And may he bless you and yours.